Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to another edition of Wrestle Chat Radio's weekly wrap-up. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York. And for the next hour, we will be discussing the world of professional wrestling at 347-215-8486. 347-215-8486. If you'd like to get in on our conversation, of course, as always, you can hit us up in the chat room. We'll take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. Well, I guess the big news this week, folks, is the MJF pipe bomb that happened this week. And basically, it has caused a couple of things to happen. The first is that there are some people saying, I don't care what anybody says, this is not a work, because they wouldn't have allowed him to swear on the air, and they wouldn't have allowed this while executives from Discovery were in the audience, and this is just proof positive that that MJF wants out. Then the second school of thought is, this is proof positive that every single thing that we heard about this entire situation has been a work from day one. Now, what I'm going to tell you is this, and take it for what it's worth. I don't know MJF personally, and I don't know Tony Khan personally. So there's no way for anybody to tell you beyond a shadow of a doubt. But an educated guest tells me that what happened over the weekend was not a work, because it involved, and if it was, then it was a really, really, really ill-conceived work, because it involved no showing an event where fans had paid ahead of time. Now, I know a lot of people say, well, but they were refunded the money, or they were able to go pick a different wrestler. That's not the point. The point is, there are people who might have traveled from out of state, two states away, three states away, hell, some people might have even traveled cross country. You don't know. For the chance to meet MJF and get an autograph, and it didn't happen. Now, you're the same people who say, well, when the WWE advertises somebody at a show and they're not there, that's false advertising, and that's terrible, and that shows horrible business. Okay, well, then what does this show? What does this show? So you can't talk out of both sides of your mouth. If it's wrong for the WWE, it's wrong for AEW. And if this was a work and they told them just stay away from the meet and greet, you ripped off your fans, and it's bullshit. Now, I don't think that's what happened. In my personal opinion, what I think happened is that MJF was disgruntled, and he wanted to force Tony Khan's hand. And he no-showed the meet and greet and threatened to no-show the pay-per-view. And during the course of a few hours or a period of time, something was worked out. Now, I'm hearing that he might have possibly got a raise, which sets a horrible precedent, by the way, just a horrible precedent. We can get into that at another time, but if you agree to do a job for one price and then hold your breath and refuse to do the job until your salary is doubled, I don't want to begin to tell you what that makes you, but it doesn't make you a very reliable worker. What I think they've done is, I think they've taken a bad situation and resolved it and decided, well, since it's been so widely publicized, we may as well make it an angle. We may as well turn it into a work. And that's what they did. Under no circumstances would MJF been allowed to use a hot mic on television unless they damn sure knew what he was going to say. Now, I don't know if they knew he was going to drop the F-bomb. I don't know. But they sure knew basically what he was going to say. So that is a work. I promise you that's a work. But what's interesting is, even some AEW guys are saying the same thing I'm saying. They're saying, okay, well, this is obviously a work now. But I better not find out that this was a work during the meet and greet, because I was forced to do extra work, or I was forced to you know, have to explain things, or I was forced to stay longer, and that's not fair. This is what I told you. See, at the end of the day, the one thing we have to utilize is common sense. And common sense would tell you that a smart businessman would never purposely deny the fans of something they had already paid for and was looking forward to. That is never good business. It does not matter if you think it's a good angle. So, I mean, how far do you go for a good angle? Do you have MJF punch a fan so that he can be arrested? And you say, oh, well, that was real. The fan is pressing charges. And, well, that's fine. We'll pay the fan off. But, boy, what an angle. Now, there's certain things you don't – there's certain lines you don't cross. And I don't think you cross the line of we have advertised someone and you've prepaid tickets to see him and get his autograph and get his picture, and he's not coming, and we know he's not coming. I would hope that AEW didn't go that route. Now, here's what concerns me, folks. It wasn't so very long ago that Tony Khan had made a comment that really worried me. He was saying, I want to try to develop my own on-air character. And I said, oh, Jesus, here we go. Another guy who wants to be Billy Corrigan and create a character. And if he's still into this, this might be the way to do it. He's called, MJF has called Tony Khan every name in the book. And Tony Khan is definitely going to have to respond to that. And if we're going to get some kind of a boss versus worker thing like Vince McMahon and Stone Cold Steve Austin, this is not going to be good. I'm going to tell you right now, it's not going to be good. Number one, it's just blatantly copying something that another federation did. Completely. And number two, Tony Khan's not the guy to do it. Flat out not the guy to do it. But I worry that might be the direction this is going based upon what I heard MJF say. Because you know Tony Khan is going to address those comments. Now, before we get to the panel to talk about this, let me say one other thing that bothers me. If you're an AEW fan, and you are now currently today saying this is the coolest thing ever, I get it. But I want you to understand something. When other people said, hey, Tony Khan's a money mark. Tony Khan's just a fan trying to be friends with the wrestlers. He's not a competent professional wrestling booker or anything. He's just some guy who happened to have a lot of money and he let me play with my toys. We were called every single name in the book. Oh, you just hate AEW. Oh, you don't know what you're talking about. Oh, you're this, you're that, you're the other thing. When MJF says it, all of a sudden it's like, oh, man, did you hear him? He really spoke the truth. Well, wait a minute. That's what we said, too. So how come we weren't speaking the truth? See, the hypocrisy, I have a problem with that. I don't have a problem with you enjoying this angle. I'm enjoying this angle. I have a problem with the hypocrisy of it. Because now people are saying, well, this is going to turn MJF face. What's going to turn him face? Saying the same thing that you got angry with us for saying? That's interesting. Now, to the people who are still out there saying the whole thing's real, number one, it's not. Enjoy that illusion. I'm glad that we're having a wrestling angle where people can actually think it might be. But at the same time, we have a couple of AEW wrestlers who were flat out asked. This guy stays in character all the time. So it's almost impossible for you to know what's a work and what's a shoot. And they said, that's not true. He doesn't stay in character all the time. He's never in character backstage. If he was in character backstage, he'd already been fired a year ago. Nobody's going to put up with that. He's not like that at all. So when these same workers say, this probably was not a work, him missing the meet and greet, I have to believe them. they supposedly talked, some of these people talked to MJF and said, this better not have been a work, because then that pisses me off because you didn't tell me, and I ended up having to answer questions about you or work a little harder. And supposedly MJF had told him it was, this is not a work. So what they did was they took a shoot and a bad situation and are attempting to turn it into a good situation, which is what wrestling does. And is what technically they should do with situations like this. Take a negative, turn it into a positive. There's nothing wrong with that. But I caution Tony Khan that if you think this is going to lead to you being an on-air character who I'm going to try to thwart MJF every step of the way because he insulted me, fans don't want to see it. I'm telling you right now, fans don't want to see it, and it's not going to do anything but undermine MJF. It's not going to make him the next Stone Cold Steve Austin, and it's not going to make you the next Vince McMahon. Let this just play out among the boys. Keep your nose out of it. Doesn't mean you can't make a comment here and there. Doesn't mean you can't add to it. But let's not take up professional wrestlers' television time with Tony Khan coming out there trying to play a character when he clearly is not an actor and he's clearly not a guy who should be doing that. And if you do, I think you're going to have to explain to some of these other workers, how come I'm never on the show and Tony Khan's going to have 10 minutes a night with his MJF stuff? So that's what I'm mostly worried about, Mike.
Me too, but here's the other thing you got to understand. You mentioned the situation reminds you a lot of Stone Cold and kind of Stone Cold and Vince McMahon. The difference is, and we saw it earlier about a month and a half ago when they were in the ring together, those two guys, one's 75, one's in his mid-70s, the other one's going to be 60 sooner rather than later. It's the chemistry those two, that Vince and Stone Cold have. They still have that chemistry. And, you know, it remains to be seen what type of chemistry, if they're going to turn this into an angle, it remains to be seen what type of chemistry that MJF and what's his name and Tony Khan are going to have in the ring together. It can't be as good as Stone Cold and Vince.
Well, it's not going to be because we already know how Tony Khan acts. We already see Tony Khan doing his promos and everything. He is not Vince McMahon. Vince McMahon was around the business his entire life, grew up in the business, understood the business, announced for wrestling for I don't know how long, and then became the owner of the company and all that kind of stuff. He gets it. And the persona he created and his ability to act in that persona was very convincing. And he had the Bret Hart situation that helped that persona, if you remember. Tony Khan doesn't have any of that. What's Tony Khan going to do? Going to fight MJF? I mean, come on. So let's hope that's not the plan. Let's just hope that's not the plan. Because if it is, Todd, I think this is a big misstep for AEW going forward.
Oh, you're absolutely right there, like you said, about this this whole MJF thing that we were talking about. Like you said the other night when he came out, if it was not a work, he would not come out like that and blur it out. And they blur that effing smart mark. They bleep that out. I think there's an uncensored version.
Yeah, well, they had a delay. So technically, if he said that and he wasn't supposed to, they still could bleep it out because they're on, I don't know how many second delay, but they could do that. But trust me, they're never going to give him the mic. They're not going to say, you no-showed, almost no-showed a pay-per-view. You're obviously really pissed at me, but I'm going to give you the mic and say whatever you want. No, that's not happening. That's just not happening. So they already knew at least the meat of what he was going to say. Did he take it too far with the F-bomb? I don't know whether that was scripted or not. Probably not. But if it was, he certainly gave them enough time by saying it nice and slowly to have them be able to bleep it out. So who knows? I'm not so concerned with that. I'm concerned with where that's going to lead. Because regardless of what anyone says, if your objective was to make MJF the most hated guy in the Federation by basically crapping all over your Federation, you've achieved the opposite. He's now a face. Regardless of what you may think. And the other thing that you might want to consider is this. When you have someone who is openly mocking your business, because that's his gimmick, I'm going to mock the AEW. All of you washed up WWE wrestlers who came over here for a paycheck. Okay, maybe that he's cleared it with all them and they're all like, oh, cool, that sounds fun. You can say that, absolutely. I wouldn't be offended. That's all good. But it's the fans' perspective. So in other words, if the fans are cheering someone who's saying your business is nothing but a bunch of old washed-up WWE guys being given too much money and too much TV time, and the fans cheer that, then it makes me think they believe that. And if they believe that, that's not really good for your business. You know what I mean? It's almost like, yeah, you tell the truth, MJF. Yeah, this company does suck that way. Well, you don't want that. How do you think that's going to help your business? I mean, technically, they should be booing him, saying, that's not true. MJF's a liar. MJF's a punk. But it had the opposite effect. And people were cheering it. Yeah, you tell them. That's right. Well, wait a minute. Then you're admitting that your own fan base thinks you're basically an entire locker room filled with washed up WWE guys that you overpaid. Ouch. You know what I mean, Mike? That doesn't speak well. When someone speaks terribly of your business and becomes a face because of it, it doesn't speak well of your persona with the fans.
Absolutely. And to the people that I once said that I once thought that this was somewhat akin to the whole CM Punk thing when he was going after his contract with the WWE, this is different, all right? And yeah, you're right. If this isn't the way to turn, to flip him face, to flip MJF face, but apparently that's what it looks like is probably gonna happen, because the fans are cheering him.
Yeah. Well, that's my point. When the fans are cheering somebody who says your company is filled with washed up WWE stars that you overpaid, that almost makes, if you own that company, you have to say to yourself, well, wait a minute. Is that what the fans really think of this company? Because they're cheering the guy who's saying it. I don't know if that's the best look for your company, but whatever. We'll see what happens. Certainly MJF is always going to be one of these guys that when he takes the microphone, people are going to say, well, let's listen to what he has to say. So that's never a bad thing. But there are other things to consider. I guess that's my point. Let's see where it leads. I'm cautiously optimistic that they'll do the right thing with this. Now, what would the right thing be? Truthfully, if you want my honest opinion, the right thing would be to probably flip CM Punk to heel. Let MJF go on a suspension for a little while. Don't get Tony Khan involved saying, how dare you, MJF? How dare you say these things? Come say them to my face. I'm going to fire you. I'm going to do this and be Vince McMahon. Don't do that. Put him out for a while on suspension. Flip CM Punk. Make CM Punk an unbearable heel who says, this company wouldn't be anything without the WWE guys. He's absolutely right. Yeah, I talk trash about the WWE, but they made me famous. This company didn't make me famous. I came over here and took the championship away from all of you people who thought, oh, all these young, great talents, all these great indie workers, and I didn't even break a sweat taking away your freaking title. It's a joke. And there's nobody here who can take it from me. Then, if you have MJF come back from the suspension and be reluctantly sort of the anti-hero who says, this company screwed me over so many times I can't begin to tell you, I'm not going to let you talk bullshit about that. I can take that belt away from you. then I think a lot of people would be on his side, and I think you'd get some really great skits and interviews and things out of it, and that's probably the way to turn MJF face. Anyway, let's get on to poor Lacey Evans. You know, very, very rarely do I say, and anybody who listens to this show knows it, very rarely do I say you might want to walk. Sasha Banks and Naomi, I think they're outrageous in what they did. From what I hear, Sasha Banks is not coming back. The WWE is not interested in her coming back. That's what I'm hearing. Naomi, they're working on things, from what I hear. They were totally in the wrong. I don't care what your opinion is about it, folks. You can't violate your contract, and you don't get to call your own shots. You don't get to be a third baseman for a championship team and say, I think I want to play the outfield today, or I quit. You don't get to do that. However, since Lacey Evans hasn't even wrestled a match, I think she would be well within her rights to say, you know what, I think I give up. I really don't think you have any plans for me. I don't think any plans you have for me is going to be anything that's actually going to make it worth my while, and I would just really rather be released. Her, I could see, because you have no clue what you're going to do with her. You don't have any clue. And when you have no clue, the best thing to do is don't introduce them. Wait until you do have a clue. But that's not what you did. You introduced her, and she cut these heart-rending promos about how she had a terribly hard life. My thought at the time, when she did the first one, I said on this show, that's good. That's real good. It's almost like she came clean and said, you know, I'm just airing everything out to get it out in the open. Should have done it on a show, probably Pat McAfee's show, and then had them show highlights of that. But nonetheless, she did it. But then when the second week came and the third week came, I said, uh-oh, I'm not liking where this is going. And the reason I'm not liking where it's going is because now you're making it a pity party. Now it's like, oh, poor me, and more things happen to me, and I'm like, you know what? This could have the opposite effect. This could make people say, okay, we get it. We all have hard lives. Jesus Christ. And then they did that ridiculous thing on where they literally introduced her and said she has requested everybody stand up and show her the proper respect. And I said, oh, my God, they're going to turn her heel. They're going to make her a heel who just says, my life is so hard and yours isn't. And I said, well, that doesn't – they shouldn't have talked about people committing suicide and her dad abusing her and things, because – that's going too far. She should have talked about the hardships of, I broke a nail today, my outfit was a little bit too baggy on me, and I told those people what my size were, and, you know, how can I deal with such hardships, that kind of stuff. So people said, oh, well, she thinks that's the hardest thing in the world, that her outfit didn't come out right, she broke a nail. That would have been okay for a heel. Saying my father abused me and my close relative committed suicide, that's not something for a heel to say. So when they started into the heel persona, I said, this is absolutely ridiculous. This is not going to work. Then they flipped back, and she said, oh, I want to thank all the men and women in the armed services. And I said, Jesus Christ, what are you doing? Now they put her back on SmackDown. She went from SmackDown to Raw to SmackDown. She still hasn't competed in a match. They have no idea what they want to do with her. They're not sure whether she's a heel or a face. They're not sure whether she's on Raw or SmackDown. They don't know. They're bouncing her around like a rubber ball, throwing ideas at the wall and saying, let's see how fans react to this and that and this and that and that and this, rather than to have a game plan. You've ruined her again. There's nothing you can do with her. What are you going to do now? Explain to me what you're going to do. She's going to come out and be a big face now and say, oh, well, you know, I'm so happy everybody was inspired by my story, and I'm so grateful that people would consider me a role model. When you just told the crowd show proper respect, she insists upon it by standing and applauding her. You think we're going to forget that? Or you're going to make her a heel who comes out and says, yes, I greatly respect everyone in the military, and I've had a very hard life, and I could be a role model to you, but I'm a bad guy. You have no clue. You have totally dropped the ball with introducing her into the WWE, and you know you did. So now she's in limbo where no matter what she does, it's going to suck, and you're going to blame her. You're going to say, well, she's just not that charismatic. Well, the fans just don't care. That's not true. What is true is you can't half-ass somebody. Either make her, if you're going to do this, the way to do it, you put her on Pat McAfee. She talks about wanting to return to wrestling. She talks about whatever. You tell McAfee ahead of time, start digging into her past. It's rigged, but start digging into her past, and then she's going to come clean with all these things that actually is true, I guess. And we're going to show that, and the announcers are going to say, wow, did you see the Pat McAfee show and what Lacey Evans said? And now Lacey Evans, at the end of that interview, should say, I'm kind of embarrassed to even show my face now. I don't know how the fans are even going to react, you know? I've aired all my dirty laundry. And when I step back out there on that ramp, I don't know. I'm going to feel different. I'm going to feel like everybody in that arena knows everything about me, and maybe they won't like me, or maybe I don't know. You know what would have happened? She would have got a standing ovation. She'd have cried a little bit. The announcers would have said, this is a magical moment for her. Listen to the adulation of this crowd for her telling the truth and overcoming the things she overcame in her life. And you would have had a top face. Or you could have told her, don't talk about your past. We're going to make you this disingenuous heel. So talk about how, do you know how hard it is to do your hair in a locker room filled with women who are chatting? Do you know how hard it is to get a good makeup artist? And I broke a nail the other day, and you think I could find a good manicurist to fix it? These people think they got problems. Then we would have said, okay, we see where you're going. You're a self-absorbed, disingenuous heel. You did neither one. You put her somewhere in the middle. We're bouncing back and forth. And now people are just like, I don't know what she is, and I don't care. Mike, they've ruined her before she had her first wrestling match. This has to be a record for the WWE.
No, I don't think it's a record, because look how many times they ruined Bray Wyatt.
Well, he had wrestling matches. Right. She hasn't even had a match yet.
That's right. And think about this. I've said it before. They could have had the next we said it with Bayley, and I'll say it again. If they played her right, they could have had the female John Cena. Think about it. Ex-military person, supports the military, good-looking, presents well, can speak. When she's given stuff to say that you can understand, she can speak well, she presents well, you know. They continually do this stuff with different people. She's just the latest one, you know.
Yeah, and Mike, they had her perfect foil to begin with. You have Carmella, who could have come out and said, oh, boo-hoo-hoo, Lacey Evans has had a hard life. I grew up in Staten Island. Do you know there's not even a good hairdresser in Staten Island? I had to do my own hair until I was like 16 years old. You know, you could have had that self-absorbed here where Lacey Evans is like, well, I don't know what this girl's talking about. She ain't seen one hard day in her life. She's just a self-absorbed little princess who thinks every little thing revolves around her. You would have had the perfect foil for her. Instead, they do this, Mike. I don't know. I just don't know what they have planned for this, Lacey Evans.
I don't know what they have planned for her either, and that's the thing. I mean, this is poor writing, poor. I mean, she's not the Miz or whatever. That she's not any of these people that can take bull crap and taking chicken shit and make chicken salad out of it. I mean, they're all people that can do that with crap, you know. They can make something out of crap. She's not. She needs all the help she can get, and they're not giving it to her, and you're right. You know, she would be well within her rights to go to Vince and say, hey, look, you know, you're not using me correctly. I don't understand where we're going with this thing. If you're not going to correct it, then fine, let me go and whatever. And we go our separate ways.
I mean, it's one thing. See, this is the difference. If she said, I don't want to do this, I don't want to air my dirty laundry or whatever, I would have said, well, come on, man, you know, give it a chance. This is a creative thing for you. No, she did it. See, I was listening to an interview with Tyrus the other day, and he was saying, you know, I was supposed to be the top heel when I came into the Federation, Brodus Clay. I was earmarked to go against John Cena and The Undertaker and all those people, and I was supposed to be this badass, big, mean, couldn't give a damn about anybody, and because I guess I joked around a little too much in the locker room, and, you know, I have a weird sense of humor that some people don't necessarily get, Vince McMahon decided my punishment gimmick was going to be this Funkasaurus. And I said, I'm not doing it. I said, well, I don't want to be a face, and I don't know how to dance, and I'm not wearing this stupid outfit, and I don't want to do it. And he said, Triple H came to me and said, Vince is insistent on this. Just give it a go. See what happens. And I said, let me go talk to Dusty Rhodes, because Dusty usually gives me a clear perspective. And he said, Dusty Rhodes said to me, did you see me when I was in a polka dot outfit? Yeah, the polka dot outfit was great. He said, yeah, well, let me tell you something. Do you think you're better than me? I was how many times champion? How famous was I? And I got into that polka dot outfit because that's what they wanted me to do, and I had bills to pay. But guess what else I did? I made something of that gimmick. You're sitting here telling me you thought it was a cool gimmick. Well, I thought it was a punishment gimmick. But I took that gimmick and I made you think it was cool. How come you're better than me? How come you can't take this gimmick and make it cool? And Tyrus said, what could I say? I was like, you're absolutely right. I didn't mean to insinuate that I was better than you or anything. I can't dance. I don't know how to dance. And he said, okay, well, you know what? We'll get you some help. We'll get you Naomi and her partner. And now he says, looking back on it, at the time I did not like it. And I said, I want to be that main bad guy who was, you know, badass and whatever. But he said, Diana, looking back on it, it was my favorite time in WWE. Now that I'm out of it, because I got to interact with the fans and bring back that you can get kids in the ring to dance, and it was something that the WWE doesn't do now and hadn't done for a while. And in retrospect, what I thought was a really terrible idea and a punishment gimmick was actually really good, and it worked for me. Okay, well, see, there you go. So it's not about gimmicks. It's about you don't have one. There is no gimmick for Lacey Evans. Is she serious and we should be looking at her as someone who overcame great hardship to realize her dreams and thus she's inspirational? Or is she a shallow person who says everybody should get on their hands and knees to me because I overcame? We don't know which one because you won't tell us. And the reason I say this is a record for the WWE is she hasn't had one match yet. So don't tell me she's failing on her own because she's been given no opportunity to even get in a ring. You've ruined her before she has her first match. It's one thing to ruin somebody after they've had a few matches. When you ruin them before they've even locked up with a first opponent, I don't know what to tell you. It's absolutely amazing, Todd, how bad they have screwed up Lacey Evans before she even got to get in the ring.
Well, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, they're just giving her the runaround, basically. You're going to go there here. No. We're going to send you back to Raw. We're going to send you to SmackDown. No, back to Raw. So, like, this is giving her, like, your runaround anymore lately.
Yeah, you know what this would be like? This would be like saying, okay, Elias, you're coming out as Ezekiel. And then they say, oh, we didn't like that. You're coming out as, you're going to come out as a painter named Pierre. No, we don't like that either. You're coming back out as Elias. No, to go back to Ezekiel, pretty soon fans will just be like, we don't even care. This is just dumb. Well, that's what you've got with Lacey Evans. And then you can't point your finger and say, well, it's your fault. No one could overcome that. Mike was talking about taking chicken shit and making chicken salad of it. Yeah, you could take a bad gimmick and make something of it. But this is lack of a gimmick. There is no gimmick. How do you make something of something when there is nothing? Give me something bad and you can make it good. Or you could take something good and make it bad. But you can't take nothing and make it something. And that's what they've given her. Absolutely nothing. It's outrageous. Absolutely outrageous. Now, I'm hearing on this upcoming Hell in the Cell that they're not even going to have any SmackDown guys on there. I don't think there's been one SmackDown match announced with SmackDown athletes that I know of. There was some rumor we were going to have Shinsuke Nakamura and Matt Riddle against the Usos, but I guess that's been nixed, so that's not happening. So it looks like an all-Raw pay-per-view, kind of. I mean, I know some people cross-promotion, but I haven't heard anything about any SmackDown matches. So I thought that was kind of interesting. Also interesting is that Cesaro, who was gone for the WWE for how long now? I was under the impression that he probably had done some independent somewhere. But what I'm being told is Cesaro has not wrestled since he left WWE. And apparently some people have reached out to ask him about his price or ask him about possibly wrestling for them. And the word they're getting is that he's taken some time off to be with his family because I guess he has a young kid. Taking some time off to be with his family. And he'll be, I guess, reconsidering what his wrestling career is going to be. Now, Tony Khan has said some good things about Cesaro, but he's not really said he's overly interested in signing him. Impact Wrestling probably can't afford him. I'm sure he doesn't want to go to Japan or whatever if he wants to spend time with his family. So I'm starting to get this feeling that perhaps there might be some possibility of renegotiation with WWE. Give Cesaro some time to off, let things calm down a little bit, maybe renegotiate a contract and see what happens because it might be in his best interest. Now, I'm not saying I know that's what's going to happen. But logically speaking, the doors are full in the dressing room of AEW. I don't know how many more people you could possibly sign. And I just don't think Impact has the money. And I don't know where else you'd go. So I wouldn't be surprised, Mike, if there's some renegotiation in the near future with Cesaro, even though he has filed to change his name to Claudio CRSO or whatever it is.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't get it. I mean, apparently, you know, I just look at it like this. If he was going to go to AEW, his ex-partner is there, you know. Hager is there, so, you know, it is what it is with that. I don't know, you know.
Yeah, and conversely, of course, we could potentially, I guess, see him just float on the independent. I don't know. But so far, he has not taken any independent wrestling gigs. None. So I thought that's kind of interesting. Also, we have some Bray Wyatt information. Bray Wyatt apparently changed his name back on his Instagram, and he's kind of hinting that he might potentially be wrestling soon. And I don't think it's in AEW. I don't see anything being set up for him in AEW. So we may actually see, there are some people, now, again, I'm not going to get anybody's hopes up, and I have absolutely no inside information on this, but I have heard rumors that you might see a Wyatt appearance at Hell in a Cell. That would be one hell of a surprise if that happens. One hell of a surprise. He hasn't wrestled. I think he's done some, like, fan fests and things, but he has not wrestled since the WWE released him. And he really hadn't indicated that he even wanted to, and there were some people saying, yeah, he doesn't have to. He's pretty good with his money. He's got other projects in the works, and if he doesn't want to return to wrestling, he doesn't have to. I heard his price was so high that even Tony Khan said no. But all of a sudden, he's saying the wait's almost over, and he's dropping these cryptic hints that he may be coming back, Todd. So should we be on Wyatt alert?
I believe so. I think we should be on a Bray Wyatt alert thingy. And, you know, like you said, he brought back his name on Instagram, his handle of Bray Wyatt and everything. Like you said, we might see him this Sunday at Hell in a Cell.
Well, he brought back Wyatt. I don't think he brought back the Bray part, but he did bring back the Wyatt part. Really strange. Yeah, I mean, he likes to troll the fans, Mike. But this would be maybe considered trolling too far. Because when you tell people the wait's over, the urge is back, all that kind of stuff, and then nothing happens, fans kind of then just say, you know what, I'm not going to listen to him anymore. So I don't think that's the case. So you think we should be on Wyatt alert this Sunday?
I think so. I mean, depending on what he plans on doing. Now, I mean, he did change. Didn't he change his Twitter handle to Wyndham or something like that?
Wyndham Rotundo,
Wyndham,
yeah.
Rotundo.
But then he mentioned he had a hashtag Wyatt something. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it could be, you could, I mean, if anything, if he can rechange it back to whatever it was, why WWE or whatever the hell it is, and they could, he's not going to, I know he's got a totally different look now in terms of his hair, and he's, I guess he shaved his beard or whatever, but I think what you got is if he does appear tonight, this weekend, it'll more than likely be under the mask as the Fiend.
Right.
I don't know if he's had enough time to grow his hair out and get extensions and grow his beard out and all that stuff. So he'll probably be under a mask as the Fiend if he does return this weekend.
Yeah, interesting. Also, apparently Big Cass has ended his commitment with AEW. And he's gone from AEW, and there's a lot of people saying that's because Vince hired him. So we'll see if there's a Big Cass alert coming up in WWE. And another piece of information is that apparently John Morrison was not signed to AEW as we thought. He was just appearance by appearance and still is appearance by appearance. He has not signed a contract with AEW. So he's just an appearance-based wrestler on there. So that's interesting. So we may be seeing some new people here in the WWE very soon, some returning old people, I should say, in the WWE very soon. Bray Wyatt would be a big one. The outcry when he was released was vast. Now, I know there's some people who hated the Fiend character, but irregardless to what you say, he was making so much money for that company on merchandise that he was virtually wrestling for free. I know a lot of people were saying, well, his asking price was astronomical, and why should he be one of the top paid wrestlers? It's not like he goes out there and does 25-minute bust-your-ass matches. No, but he was selling so much merchandise. So if you're him and you've created this character and you say, I'm making you guys five times my salary in merchandise alone, let alone selling your pay-per-views and selling tickets and getting ratings and things for the show, Yeah, your asking price would be pretty high because you'd say, well, look at my value. Look how many shirts I'm going to sell. Look how many gimmicks I'm going to sell. I mean, they had a Fiend belt that was going for like $1,000 or $1,500 or something like that. They had that diorama of the Funhouse. That was going for huge money. They had some very high-end Bray Wyatt things. What does that tell me? Well, I'll tell you what that tells me. Kids don't have that kind of money. And parents aren't going to give kids that kind of money. Your kid comes to you and says, can I have a John Cena t-shirt for $25? Yeah. Can I have a Fiend belt for $1,500? Can I have a diorama of the Funhouse for $500? You're going to be like, what, are you insane? So you know who's buying that? Adults. Adults with money and adults who are collectors. And that's a really good audience for your merchandise. So when you have a guy who connects with that kind of a demographic, the collectible market, that's a different thing, Mike, because now you're dealing with higher-end merchandise and merchandise that people will consider collectible and buy because it's collectible.
Yeah, think about this. When you bought that sweater, that Christmas sweater, how much did it cost you?
$60.
Yeah. So, and a kid is not going to be buying that sweater.
No.
Right?
No.
So,
yeah, that's my point. A lot of that merchandise, Mike, was geared toward an older audience.
That's right, and that's the thing. And like you said, if he's selling you that type of merchandise at those type of prices, and he's selling you you're probably not the only one that bought that sweater.
Oh, I'm sure.
You know?
Right.
You know, so if you're getting, I don't know, 10 people buying that sweater at $60 a piece, you're making $600 there.
And it's probably more like 10,000. See, that's the thing. And the thing about the Fiend, Mike, is he appealed to the older and the younger. So you could do the high end. You could say, we're having the Fiend belt for $1,500 or $2,000. We're having the diorama. We're having those individual puppets for $100, $80, whatever the hell they were. But we're also having like little plastic Fiend mask for $15 and t-shirts for $20. And little tiny figures for 10 or 15. So there was something there for the younger kid. And there was something there for the collectors. Now, let's take that and compare it with John Cena, who probably has sold more merchandise over the years, obviously. But I don't know anybody above the age of like 25 who really has any John Cena merchandise other than maybe they have like an action figure if they want to be a complete collector. But most of his audience is going to be the younger generation. Most of his audience and the things that he sells, the armbands and the you can't see me and the never give up stuff, that's geared toward kids. And they don't have a lot of like higher end John Cena stuff. So when you do have a wrestler who you can say we can market it to kids, but we can also market it to adults and collectors in the pop culture market, then you have something, Mike, because virtually you've got a character who appeals to a wider range of potential customers.
Right. And think about this. You look at what's happening. Yeah, they're not doing anything with Alexa right now, but those dolls are still selling. Those Lily dolls,
yep.
They're still selling.
Yep.
Those aren't meant for kids.
Of course not. I mean, a kid might buy one, but the bottom line is that's why she's still got the doll. You're right. She's not doing anything with the doll, but you notice they didn't drop that doll as a gimmick. You know why? Because it's one of the top-selling things they have in their store. And to be honest with you, far be it from me to buy a doll, okay? I wouldn't necessarily be someone who'd in the market for a doll. I don't go to toy stores and say, let me go to the doll section. But I've considered buying one because I said, well, this is going to be a real piece of wrestling history someday. you're going to be able to look back and say, remember when Alexa Bliss did that gimmick and this was her supposedly possessed doll or something? That's pretty cool. And it wouldn't be necessarily a bad thing to sit on the shelf of your wrestling collectible room and say, this is interesting. I haven't done it yet, but I would consider it. And when you can reach that kind of a market, Mike, where little girls are buying it and grown men might think of buying it, you've stretched between the kids who think it's just, oh, it's a nice thing, and someone like me who says this is a future collectible.
Absolutely, and that's the thing. And think about it. I mean, look, we talk all the time about what they had with Rusev Day. I mean, for God's sakes, they were selling Rusev Day calendars by the truckloads for $15 a piece, right?
Yep, yep.
You know, and they screwed that up. And that's the thing. And by the way, Miro came back, and, of course, Lana had to say something about it on her Twitter feed, but and you would expect that. But, yeah, they, for God's sakes, and to tell you the truth, if I were Miro, when my contract comes up, I would seriously think about going back to the WWE.
If they offered me something, I sure as hell would, because the bottom line, and yeah, Lana was backstage even, that Lana's, they're pushing hard to try to get Lana in there, I know. But yeah, I mean, this is what I'm saying. When you market something, like let's say you're going to market Nikki A.S.H. merchandise. Do you think a 30-year-old man is going to wear a Nikki A.S.H. t-shirt? No. Do you think he's going to wear a mask? No. Do you think he's going to wear some kind of superhero thing? No. That's marketed to kids, young kids. Her merchandising to an older audience is probably very, very minimal. Whereas somebody like The Fiend, it's all over the place. Kids like it. Adults like it. Horror film fans like it. Pop culture collectible people like it. There's such a wide market for his merchandise. Such a wide market. Let me give you a great example. If anybody ever heard of the band The Misfits, they used to have this skull as a logo. And anywhere you went in, like, skate parks, there were skate kids with Misfits t-shirts, didn't even know who the Misfits were. If you ask them what's your favorite album, they're like, I don't even, what's that? It's a band? Yeah, yeah, it's a band. But the appeal of the merchandise and the gimmick was so strong that, yes, fans of the Misfits bought it, but not fans who didn't even know who the Misfits were bought it. Well, I think the same thing happened with The Fiend. You know, when you see these cool sort of horror gimmicky things, there were people buying, you know, the Funko Pops who said, well, I'm not a big wrestling fan, but that's one cool freaking Funko Pop. And it's probably going to be highly collectible. Look, they got The Fiend with a Santa Claus hat on. That's going to be a collectible. It's, that's going to be a variation of that people are going to want through the years. So when you get things like that, Mike, it ends up that a guy like Bray Wyatt's kind of wrestling for free.
That's right, and that's the thing. I mean, I don't know what he was getting at the time, you know, in terms of his salary, you know, and the thing is, you don't know. I mean, think about it. You know, we talk about men buying women's merchandise. I bought me one of Becky Lynch's t-shirts, the man,
mm-hmm.
you know, one of her the man
yep.
t-shirts. I've got one, you know, so she can market – herself, you know. There are certain women that can market themselves. Hell, I'd seriously think about buying a Charlotte Flair thing, you know.
Well, Lana was one of those. I think Lana's merchandise were basically sold to men and adult men, right, who just like the Lana t-shirt, you know, like people used to wear t-shirts of the pinup models in the 80s or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
Yep. I don't think there were too many little girls buying Lana t-shirts.
No.
So, yeah, I mean, merchandise is a big part of this, Mike. It's a huge part. And that's why I'm saying a guy like Bray Wyatt's not dumb. And I don't think he's saying, because there's a lot of people who said, how dare he think he's worth more than, you know, a great quality wrestler when he's just an average wrestler. because of his marketability. That's why. He's so marketable. That's why Alexa Bliss is worth more than, you know, let's say Nikki Cross. I like Nikki Cross, but she's not as marketable as Alexa Bliss. Because, again, you got people saying, well, I'm going to get one of them dolls, even though it's a doll, because it's still a possessed doll. It's still an ugly-looking, horrific, supposedly possessed doll. Wouldn't that look cool on my shelf next to my Alexa Bliss figure or next to the Fiend, you know, merchandise? Of course. Of course it would. Of course it would. I kicked myself in the head for not getting all of those Bray Wyatt figures, like the pig, whatever, what was it called? Horus or whatever the hell it was called, and the vulture and the rabbit. When they were selling them, I said, well, I'm going to get them, and then they pulled them before I could get them. And that's a shame, because I really did want them. Not because I want to collect a little figure that looks like a rabbit, but because of the Funhouse, and I said to myself, I could set this all up and make like a little Bray Wyatt shelf of Funhouse collectibles. And in the future, that's going to be something. 10, 15 years down the road, people are going to say, wow, you know, you still got those? Those are probably valuable. So, again, the marketability is where it's at, Mike.
Absolutely, and I believe it was called Huskus, because Husky Harris.
Mm-hmm.
And think about it. You get the pup, the three puppets, the vulture, the rabbit, and Huskus hog. You get Bray Wyatt, the Bray Wyatt in a sweater vest. You get Bray Wyatt, the cult leader. You get Bray Wyatt, the Fiend, and you get Alexa Bliss's. Oh, and I forgot what's her name. The puppet of what's
Sister
her
Abigail.
Name?
Sister
Abigail.
Yeah.
Didn't they do one with a? Didn't they do a double one that was supposed to be Vince McMahon?
Yes, they did. Yes,
you
they
know.
Did.
Yes, they did.
That's what I mean.
You get all that stuff together, and you get Alexa Bliss's doll. That's a pretty big deal, you know.
It's a great deal for the WWE, and that's what I mean. And out of Bray Wyatt, look what you got. You said, well, we can license the sweater vest Bray Wyatt to a company, but then they're going to have to pay extra if they want the Fiend Bray Wyatt. And then they're going to have to pay extra if they want the cult leader Bray Wyatt. So you're getting three licensing fees for one friggin' character. So if somebody comes to you and say, we want to license the rights to, I don't know, Sami Zayn, you get Sami Zayn. If you want to license Bray Wyatt, then you say, okay, well, do you want to license the Fiend or Bray Wyatt? Oh, well, we want both. We want to do the sweater vest guy, and we want to do the Fiend. Oh, okay, well, that's two separate licensing fees. So right there, Mike, they're getting double the profit.
Right. And if you do three of them, all three of them, you're getting triple the profit.
Right. So he's technically almost being like three separate entities for you. So, of course, he's going to ask for a ton of money. And he's kind of worth it, folks. Todd, that merchandising, you know, if you can merchandise it to people of all ages, that's the key.
Well, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, you could all that merchandising, you could make tons of money with it.
And again, they're almost wrestling for free. I mean, if Alexa Bliss sells enough Lily dolls to pay for her salary for a year, well, what's she wrestling for then? She's wrestling for free, right? It is a business, folks, after all. It is a business. Anyway, let's look forward to SmackDown tonight and see if they do a better job with a go-home show than Raw did, because Raw fell flat on its face this week. I don't think SmackDown can possibly do worse than Raw. And, of course, we will be back here on Sunday with the big Hell in the Cell preview show. Thanks for listening, folks.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Wrestling Chat Radio is a Savage Blade production.